I didn't know I had just stepped into bondage and shame that affected every decision in my life, and that bondage would follow me for the next 45 years.
Welcome back to Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm Victor Nieves, as always, joined by Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute. Did you know that April is Abortion Recovery Awareness Month? The purpose is to encourage and promote the healing opportunities that are available to both women and men that are grieving from the impact of abortion.
Well, and Victor, the government says that 1 in 4 women in the United States has an abortion by the time they reach age 45. This is a lot of women and men, mothers and fathers, who have chosen abortion and are struggling to deal with it in the aftermath. And today's program is going to touch your heart because you will find out how you can help others and perhaps how you can find healing yourself.
That's right, Brad. And there are many of these men and women that may not even realize that they're dealing with these issues at all. Sometimes those emotions might set in immediately, but for others, it might take months or even years. And we're going to be talking about that topic today. In honor of Abortion Recovery Awareness Month, we're joined by 3 wonderful guests. First with us is Sheila Harper. She's the founder and president of Save One, an international outreach ministry for men, women, and families that are suffering in silence after an abortion. She holds a master's degree in biblical counseling and is the author of 10 different books that have been translated into a variety of languages. Save One, which was founded in 2000, currently has more than 300 chapters in 25 different countries. We're also joined by Beth Burris. She's a passionate advocate for women who are bound in shame. She wants them to experience freedom. This was born out of her own struggle with pain and shame after she finally surrendered following 45 years of suffering due to 2 teenage pregnancies, one of which ended in abortion. After she found healing for her abortion, she has now worked with several different pregnancy centers, encouraging them in their post-abortion healing programs. She's the founder of Hem of His Garment Ministries in Lakeville, Minnesota. Finally, we're joined by Sonia Wiley. She has served with Save One since 2017. She is a chapter leader and previously was a chapter coordinator as well. She currently serves as Sheila Harper's personal office assistant and the social media coordinator for Save One. Before coming on staff, she experienced firsthand the healing that she needed from a past abortion by attending and completing the Save One Bible study. I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Sheila, Beth, Sonia, I'd like to welcome you to this program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sonia, just briefly share your story.
Well, I am a preacher's kid. I grew up in church all my life, so I have known God all my life. Sadly, though, I did not serve him, which led me into a plethora of things. As soon as I got to college, away from my home, away from the strongholds of what I thought was my religious family, and I found freedom in the world. And so I found myself in college, full ride scholarship, and I met a gentleman my first semester, my freshman year, and became pregnant, and immediately knew that I was going to have an abortion. There was not even a question or a doubt in my mind, mainly because I was selfish. I didn't want to have the responsibility of a child while I was trying to go to college. I also was deathly afraid to embarrass my family. And so I didn't want, you know, the church to talk about my family. And so I thought this would be my secret way to get rid of the situation and the problem. And plus, the world made it look so easy and acceptable, so it couldn't be really that bad. And so, unfortunately, I did make that decision to have an abortion, went back to college, and my life completely spiraled. I flunked a couple of classes, so I lost my full scholarship, ended up having to go back home to my parents. And now, they did know the decision I had made. They were very aware that I had had the abortion, but they too kept it a secret. They were not proud of that. They did everything they could physically possible for me to change my mind and not have the abortion. However, so when I came back home, I filled my life with nothing but what the world could offer me. Promiscuity, drugs, I attempted suicide a few times, and nothing brought me pleasure. And so I just in and out of relationships. And at the age of 27, I met my second husband and we got married. We have a blended family. And because I grew up in the church, I used that as a crutch. I knew God forgave me, so I didn't have to talk about it. No one had to know what my past sins were. And so I just kind of tucked that sin in this little compartment box inside and left it there and thought I was fine because God forgives. Until one day, my dad invited someone from Save One to come and talk to us at our church. And as this lady stood on the stage telling a story, it was as if I was hearing my story. And I was broken, a mess on the front row because that's where all good pastor's kids sit. And anyway, as she spoke, I just, all of the feelings that I thought I tucked inside and put away started resurfacing. And so reluctantly, I reached out to Sheila Harper and asked her about going through the Save One program. And it was there where I found my healing that I didn't even know that I necessarily needed.
Sheila?
Well, I was 19 years old and I had been raised very untraditionally, but someone always took me to church. So I felt like I knew right from wrong. But still, when I went to college, I met a guy that was fun and cute. And I thought, oh, I'll change him. It'll be great. And so I went out with him, and a year and a half into the relationship, I had moved out of my parents' home because they didn't want me to date him. I ended up pregnant. I mean, it was like my life just took a 180, and it wasn't all him. I was a willing participant. So I ended up pregnant, and I knew by now this was not the guy that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, attached through a child. And so I went to my best friend and I told her this, I'm pregnant. What am I going to do? I was so distraught over it. And she said, oh, just have an abortion. It's no big deal. I had one when I was 15. And I remember thinking, oh, it's no big deal. Well, she had one and it's no big deal. And those words just stuck in my head. And I went to my boyfriend thinking he'll be happy that I've made this decision because we can just get right back on with life. And he begged me not to have the abortion. And I went through with it anyway. As the day approached, I kept justifying it because, you know, here I am, 19 years old. The Supreme Court is much smarter than me. They know more. They wouldn't make a law that was bad for me. And so I just believed that. I believed that I could trust the government. You know, at 19, you think those things. And so I went through with this on March 29th, 1985. I will never forget that date because it was by far the worst, most horrific mistake of my life. And I spent the next 7 years just hating myself. Two weeks afterward, my boyfriend broke up with me. What I thought was just going to be going right back into the relationship, he completely broke up with me. He left me, and I knew exactly why.
Beth?
Well, I grew up in a small community in Minnesota where my father was a businessman. My mother was a stay-at-home mom, but they were very prominent in the community. For my mother, everything was about image. So no matter what we did, we had to portray this image that she thought would be acceptable to other people. When I was 16, I became pregnant, and that wasn't the image that they had in mind for the family. So I was immediately sent to foster care 2 hours away in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I had chosen adoption for my child. I had signed all the papers. And on March 26, I gave birth to a daughter, a little girl, who was born with a birth defect of hydrocephalus, meaning she had fluid on the brain. After about a week, I went back home to live with my parents. That pregnancy was never spoken of again. And then the following June of that same year, I received a letter from my social worker that my daughter had passed away, and they had held a small graveside funeral for her with my foster mother, my social worker, and their pastor in attendance. And I read that letter, and I immediately felt like I was the one that was responsible for her death. I was being punished for something, or I didn't do something correctly, or I did something I shouldn't have, therefore causing her death. And I ripped up that letter and I threw it away, and it was never spoken of again. 2 years later in 1974, I'm now 18, and I became pregnant again. This time I was a different father. And I knew that I could not go to my parents with this news for fear of rejection. And I knew I couldn't tell the father of the baby for fear of rejection and manipulation. And abortion had become legal the year before. And so I thought that was the only option that I had. So I confided in a friend of mine and made the appointment. And she drove me to that appointment where I had the abortion. And I really remember very little about that day, other than it was the spring of 1974. And we drove home pretty much in silence. But at that moment, I felt a sense of relief that my problem had been taken care of and nobody would know. And I would just pick up with my life. However, what I didn't know, I had just stepped into bondage and shame that affected every decision in my life. And that bondage would follow me for the next 45 years with nobody knowing my secret, not even the father of that baby who a few months later in the fall of that year, I did marry. Even though I knew it was dysfunctional, I married him trying to seek atonement, trying to make something a little right out of something that I knew was so wrong.
Isn't it amazing how bad decisions pour onto other bad decisions?
Yes,
and instead
absolutely.
Of the situation getting better, it just gets worse and worse and worse.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the way that you felt physically and mentally right after the abortion, Sonia.
I was numb. I actually went back home with my parents. Oddly enough, as much as they were against what I was doing, my mom actually drove me to the facility to have my abortion in silence, kind of like Beth. And we never talked about it again. But afterwards, I laid on their couch for 2 days, just numb, really. I really was not sure how I felt. I thought I would feel immediate relief. That's what I wanted to feel. But it was just, I just felt numb.
Sheila?
Right afterward, I remember that when they took me into the next room and laid me down on a beanbag chair as my recovery, I remember looking around the room at all the girls coming into that room and thinking, we just got rid of our worst problem, but why is no one happy? And I remember that question just taunting me, almost haunting me, because I could not pinpoint that was supposed to fix my problems and it didn't. And so I went home and honestly, I felt relieved for probably the first week because all I could think about was I'm not pregnant anymore. I thank God I'm not pregnant anymore. And so I felt relief. But then it was when my boyfriend rejected me that everything went in the opposite direction and I hated myself. I turned into just the opposite of who I had been because I hated myself so much for what I had done.
The train wreck had commenced, huh?
Yes.
Beth?
Like Sheila, I felt relief immediately. I felt like this was a pretty easy solution to my problem and nobody would know. My parents wouldn't know. And I'm not sure how long that lasted. I don't think it lasted very long because this was the spring of my senior year in high school. And I do know that when everybody else at that time after my abortion was making plans for their future, for going to college, for their careers, whatever it might be, I couldn't even picture myself in a future. I was totally stuck. I couldn't make any plans. I couldn't move forward. Ironically, the friend that I had confided in that drove me to that appointment, she was one of my closest friends. And all of a sudden, I couldn't be friends with her anymore, not because of anything she did. But I know now it was such a reminder of what I had done that I pulled away. And so it was relief followed by just this traumatic, without even knowing it, mindset of prison, of not knowing what my future held or even seeing a future for myself. I wasn't worthy of it.
Sheila, tell us the dramatic account of when you were at your lowest point.
Well, when my boyfriend broke up with me about 2 weeks after the abortion, I knew what I had done was horrible. I began just partying. I was in the bars every night. Within the year, I was totally reliant upon drugs and alcohol just to get through the day. I would take a pill to wake up. I would drink till I passed out. I was known at all the bars around town. It was like this total opposite life I was living than I had before the abortion. And I couldn't numb myself anymore. I had amassed a huge amount of debt from shopping because that would give me a temporary high. I mean, just everything I was doing, I could not get away from the nightmares, the flashbacks, the just being in that clinic again. It was horrible. It was a terrible place. And I decided I couldn't stand myself. So I thought, I've got to get out of here. I started thinking about my 30-year-old self and my 40-year-old self. Like, how am I going to carry this for decades? And thought was planted in my head, just take your own life. And the minute I thought that, I thought, oh, that's it. And it was almost like the answer, like a light bulb had gone off. And so I planned the day, I planned the method. I called all my family the night before because I knew the next day they would know why I called them. I made dinner for my roommate and her boyfriend. I never cooked. I still don't, but I never cooked back then. And so it was odd, but I knew that she would know the next day. And so I went to work the next day. I acted like I was sick. I knew that my roommate kept a gun in her nightstand drawer. And I cry because I know there are so many men and women who feel this way. It was a hopeless, helpless situation that I could not fix on my own. And so I went home and I got that gun and I sat down on the side of my couch and I put the barrel of that gun between my eyes. And I sat there just waiting. And I remember this apartment had these dusty old hardwood floors. And I can still see so vividly my tears just hitting in that dust on that floor as I sat there with that gun between my eyes. And I was too afraid to pull the trigger. And so I don't know how long I sat there, but I had both thumbs on the trigger. And I started saying, just do it, just do it. And so I held my breath and I thought, if I just pull the trigger very slowly, then I won't know when the bullet releases. And so I sat there pulling the trigger, just waiting on all of this to finally be over. And it was in that moment I heard tires on the gravel outside my apartment. And I jumped up, and it was my roommate home in the middle of the day. And she was not supposed to be. And so I had been so wrapped up in my own pain. I never once thought about what that would have done to her to come home and find me like she almost did. And so I knew that this was not the answer. I ran, I put her gun back in the drawer, I jumped in my bed, and she came in and asked me why I was home. And I said, I'm sick. You know, I just made something up. I'm sick. And she said, well, I am too. It must have been your cooking. And because I had cooked dinner for her the night before. And so then that was when I knew, like, I'm going to have to die a different way because I know I couldn't do that to my family or to my roommate. And so it was then I started taking massive amounts of drugs, and I would see how far I could drive with my foot all the way against the floor on the gas pedal. Like, I would see, like, hoping I would have some fiery crash or do something else because I knew my family would understand that, but they wouldn't understand suicide.
But God had another plan.
He showed up right on time.
Sheila, what was your healing process like from that point forward? What was that process for you?
A couple of years later, I met a man in a bar. I mean, there was nothing redeeming about our relationship at first. He seemed like a nice guy. I thought, there's no way he'll ever like me because I was so wild and just out there constantly. But I ended up finding out he was an alcoholic. He was a hot mess, and I was a hot mess. And we just thought, we'll make one big hot mess and get married. You know, that it made the total sense back then. So we got married, and actually, we just celebrated 35 years of marriage. And so it was by the grace of God we made it. But I took my whole family. We had two boys right away. I took my whole family on this roller coaster ride, and it was unbelievable all that happened to us. He never knew what he was going to come home to. He would come home to, I would be drunk and passed out, or I would be happy and cooking dinner. And finally, I was driving down the road one day and heard a commercial on the radio that said, if you're suffering after an abortion, we have a class for you. And it was put out by the local pregnancy center. And I remember thinking, there are others that are suffering, enough of us that they had to actually form a class. I was amazed. And so I, through many attempts, I went to this class and I knew on the very first night it was different because just like Sonia was talking about, they were telling my story. All the people in the class were talking about the suicide attempts, the suicidal thoughts, the drug use, the debt, the nightmares. I mean, like they were talking about all of this stuff. And I knew at that moment, this was a big deal. This wasn't just no big deal, like my friend had told me. It was a very big deal, and there was something to this.
Beth, how about you? What was your healing experience like?
Well, after marrying the father of the child I aborted, who never knew, we went on and had two more children, and trying to make up for the child that I had taken the life, or the two babies that I had actually lost by death. And it became extremely dysfunctional, and I became the poster child of codependency. And I just spent so much time trying to be a people pleaser. And after 27 years, that marriage ended in divorce. And I would have thoughts of my abortion would come up, and I would quickly just push that out of my head. It was too painful to think about. 4 years later, I married my current husband. And in 2018, we moved to a different area because of a job change, and I didn't know anybody. We hadn't found a church yet, and I was extremely lonely. I was depressed, and I could no longer battle those thoughts of my abortion. And I had come to know the Lord as my Savior several years before that. And yet I never felt like His forgiveness would cover the sin of my abortion. In that year of 2018, I happened to be reading that the state of New York had legalized abortion to full term. And they celebrated that law by lighting the Empire State Building pink. And I remember I was just horrified. I didn't know what was worse, that you could take the life of your child at full term, or you would celebrate such a law. And I knew I couldn't stand on the sidelines any longer. And if you had asked me before that, I would have said I was pro-life, but I wouldn't talk about it. I wouldn't even think about it. It was too painful. And so I did what I had done so well all the years before with good works. And I contacted a local pregnancy center and wanted to volunteer there. I always thought that if I could walk with those mamas that chose life for their babies, a little bit of atonement would come off of me and I could feel better for the fact that I didn't. And so I went over to that pregnancy center to tour it. And afterwards, the director was talking to me about other programs that they offered. And she happened to mention that they offered a post-abortion healing group, which I had never heard of either. I didn't know there was such a thing. And I have no idea to this day, other than the Holy Spirit, but loosening my lips. But I said to her, I had an abortion 45 years ago. And she was just met that with compassion. She wasn't shocked. There was no judgment. And she said a group was starting and would I like to participate with her? And I misunderstood her. And I thought she said that I wouldn't be able to volunteer at the center if I didn't. And I really needed that atonement. So I agreed that I would volunteer, when in fact, that's not what she said at all. I found out weeks later that she said I won't be able to work with the post-abortive women without going through some healing of myself. So again, my ears were closed up. And week after week, I began to go. And I just realized there were layers and layers and layers and layers of grief and bondage to shame. And one of the things she had done before it started was sent a letter. She asked, with our permission, to our husbands to make sure they understood what was happening and to be understanding and that this might be a difficult time. So I knew I had to tell my husband, Rick, about the abortion. He was the first person that I had ever told, and he was very supportive. And I was out shopping one day and that letter came, and he read it and he left it laying on the counter for me to see when I got home. And I got home and I picked it up and I read it, and my eyes immediately went to the word abortion. And the shame just came over me. And like I had done so many years before, and the letter informing me of the death of my daughter in 1972, I took that letter that Angela had sent from the pregnancy center and I ripped it up and I threw it away. I was in such bondage that I couldn't even see the word abortion written on a piece of paper.
And Sonia, how about you? What was your healing journey like?
I thought that I was fine tucking away what I'd known I'd done. And so I found myself becoming immersed in making sure that I did everything perfect. Everything that I would do would be of excellence so that I couldn't disappoint anyone else, that I wouldn't disappoint God. And so I fully submerged myself In 2004, I was water baptized and I just jumped full force into full-time ministry, even though I had a full-time job, because I thought I had to work my way back up to a relationship with God. Like I had to earn my way into his love and his grace, and all the while just feeling like a complete fake and failure. But I didn't know how to express that. I didn't understand why I was feeling that way again until Save One stepped into my life. So it helped knowing, like Sheila mentioned before, that there were other people out there like me. When hearing someone else share their story related so heavily to me, it made me almost like justifying how I've been feeling. It makes sense now. What she's saying on that stage is literally how I was feeling. I just didn't know how to express it. And so my abortion was in 1996. By the time they came to our church, it was 2014. Like I had been holding on to this secret for all those years and I didn't know how to express it. And it manifested itself in anger for the first several years that my husband and I were married. I don't even know how he put up with me because I was angry about everything. But it was just through God's word that helped me push past and accept that, yes, I had done those things. Yes, I had taken the life of my daughter, but his grace was enough for me and I didn't have to earn it.
Well, the recovery process can be daunting and painful. What challenges did you face along the way during your journey to healing, Sheila?
Challenges probably showing up every week, because this is a hard subject. When you have been running from this subject for so long, and you have to turn and really look at it for what it is and what you did. Because as a woman, as a mother, for I was created to nurture and protect children. Every woman is. That's our nature. That's what comes natural. We were never created to choose death for our children. And so to go against that very nature, it's like you try to fix it and you can't. So all of your creative thinking, your deductive reasoning, you know, your critical thinking skill, none of that works for this, because you're trying to fix. And this is what I had to come to grips with. I was trying to fix a problem on this human level with my own skills, a problem that is only fixed through a divine intervention. And so that was my toughest challenge, probably, is really looking at this for what it was, the ugliness, the gruesomeness, the horrible choice that I made, accepting it, realizing it, but knowing that I can release it and I can walk into this abundant life still. Like I can still do this. It's not too late for me. I can still walk into that abundant life that Jesus came to give me. And so that was probably the biggest challenge, is accepting that forgiveness for myself, letting myself up off the mat and saying, I can walk forward and have a life again. And it doesn't have to, everything I do doesn't have to go through the filter of that abortion.
Sonia?
Yeah. So what the enemy is really good at is holding you bondage to shame. And so that was huge, huge for me, is I was ashamed to let anyone know that I had had the abortion. And so being in ministry and knowing so many people in ministry, like Sheila mentioned, just getting up and going to that class every week was hard. It was hard to just swallow my pride and say, I need help. And then exposing myself and being transparent to express my story, tell everyone my secret, and then walk out God's forgiveness and grace and things that I had not forgiven others for who were part of my abortion story. So I would just say, just swallowing that pride and letting go of the shame that the enemy is so good at just holding his thumb down on you. Those were probably the hardest things for me to overcome in order to get my healing.
Beth, what were your challenges?
Oh, I'd have to totally agree with Sonia. That first meeting I went to, and I was so afraid to go because this was something that I knew was going to be really, really painful because I hadn't looked at it for so many years. And I saw myself in such bondage, and we were asked to draw a picture of how we saw ourselves. And I remember I drew a picture of myself and my wrists were like tied like this. I was in such bondage. But week after week, I would go back, I'd make myself go back, and we would hit another layer. And I had so many layers of pain and bondage that I wasn't even aware of it. And one particular day in my own reading time, I was reading my Bible. I was reading about Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And this time, as I read it, it wasn't the miracle itself, but it was Jesus asking the spectators to participate in that miracle by removing the grave cloths. And it's just like a light came on, and I realized that that's what the facilitator of the class was doing, and she was removing my grave cloths. And every week I would go back, and another grave cloth would be removed, and another grave cloth would be removed. And it wasn't until that sin and the hurt and the shame was exposed to the light that I could actually then open up and receive the redemption that Christ had for me. And it was for the first time, it's like I knew what the abundant life was in Christ. I knew what the joy of my salvation was. Even though I had been a follower of Christ, it was like opening a whole new life for me.
You know, it's often said that what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. Did you feel like you were going to survive this journey to healing, Sheila?
Probably not at first, because I doubted that I would stick with it. But week after week after week, as I saw the progress and I knew I was feeling better, and all those years that I spent hating myself were validated by hearing all these other people's stories, I started believing it. My mind started changing. Like, maybe there is hope. Maybe I can be free from this. Maybe I don't have to think about this every day or try to make myself pay for it somehow. So it took a while for my finite mind to catch up with God's word and believe it and apply it.
How about you, Sonia?
I would say the same, but I would say that when you grow up in church, you know how to play a Christian real well. And in my mind, and Sheila could probably remember this conversation, I would say, I'm fine. I don't need to go through the class. I want to help other women who are hurting. I'm good. And she'd go, yeah, but I need you to go through the class. And so I would tell you 100% honestly, the first six classes that I attended with my leader, bless her heart, because she knew beyond a shadow of a doubt, I was just going through the motions. And it was about week six. And I'm sure we don't have time for me to tell you the God revelation that happened. But it was then that God just kind of put his finger on me and said, hey, this is for you. And at that moment, that's when my mindset shifted. Like, oh, okay, I'm not just here just to get some training so I can help other people. Like, I need this for me personally.
How about you, Beth?
Yeah, I would probably agree that at first, I just didn't know what to expect. And I was very, very scared. Like I said, I did not want to go back and revisit for probably the first time in my life what I had done and the painful emotions. But as the weeks went by, just by exposing it, just by even having one other person or two other people know the secret, I began to feel this lightness about me, that the burden wasn't as heavy as had it been, you know, for the first 45 years. So that's what kept me going, I think, knowing that this is good. This is this load is getting lighter as the weeks went by.
Sheila, what do you think would have happened if you didn't go through a recovery program?
Oh, I have no doubt I would be dead. I don't think I could have carried that weight all these years.
Beth, how about you?
I don't know if I'd physically be dead, but I would be just a shell of who I am. I doubt if my second marriage would have worked out now, I would have continued in that dysfunctional role of earning my way and atonement and being whoever or whatever anybody would want me to be. And so it was just this floating in space, just not connected to anything.
And Sonia, how about you?
Yeah, same. I just ditto to both of them. I don't think I would, like Beth said, I don't know that I'd be physically dead, but I would be a shell of a person. My husband would be able to tell you that there was a distinct change in who I was before my recovery and then after.
You know, Beth, you said that you felt like you were having to earn your way. And the other two of you, I'm sure, felt the same way. But what a burden to bear. I want our listeners to stop and contemplate that for a moment, that here you are under the burden of killing your own child. Satan is whispering into your ears every day and having to hold up under that. I just can't imagine what that's like. You'll have to forgive me. I always get emotional when I think about that pain. It is just so difficult to bear. So I admire you so much, and other women and men, mothers and fathers, we have borne up through that pain.
I remember one particular Sunday actually getting ready to go to church. And we were so involved in church and everything. And I looked at my husband and I said, I can't go today. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, I cannot get on stage one more time. He had no idea what I was talking about. But my entire life had become a performance of what other people expected of me, or trying to hide that they would never find out who I really was.
Well, since April is Abortion Recovery Month, let's talk about something much more happy. Let's spend some time talking about the importance of this journey to wholeness. And what were some of your biggest breakthroughs? Beth, you start.
The biggest breakthrough is knowing that Christ loved me there. He knew me. He was there during the abortion, and there was no rejection. There was nothing that I could have ever done in the past to have him love me more, or anything I could do in the future to have me love me more. That was a huge breakthrough. And learning that exposing that sin to the light is where healing comes. The enemy would want us to keep it hidden. And exposing that in Revelations 12, I mean, it talks about how it says, by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, we'll overcome the enemy. And so just knowing that, exposing it, that was huge for me. What I was so afraid of doing was actually the gateway to healing.
Sonia?
Yeah. So my breakthrough moment, I mentioned briefly earlier that it happened around chapter 6, and I'll try to be brief, but because I was just walking through the motions of going through this recovery, because that was the only way Sheila was going to let me lead Save One classes is if I went through it. Ironically, the short story is that my facilitator made a comment about a particular gentleman's name. And when she said his name, like, my eyes just got wide. And I went home that night, but she was asking us to pray for this gentleman. And I went home that night and I rummaged through every photo I could find from that time frame in my life. And I found a picture of the father of my aborted baby. And I texted it to my facilitator. I said, is this the man that you asked us to pray for tonight? And her reply back to me was, yes. And it was in that moment, okay, God, you see me. I see you. Thank you. And from that moment on, I couldn't just show up to class and put my Christian title on and say, okay, I'm going to go through the motions. At that moment, I knew God was telling me, I need you to take this serious. There are parts of you that I need to heal. And that was my breakthrough moment.
That's a tough one to follow, Sheila, but
I know, right? But I love that story. It never gets old. But probably my biggest breakthrough was at the beginning, when I had spent all of those years trying to reconcile my friends, saying this was no big deal, and trusting the Supreme Court. I was still trying to believe this was supposed to be no big deal. And I trusted the government to not make a law that would hurt me. And to get into that class and see that this was really a thing, that this, I was thinking I was lied to. It made me angry, but it also made me justified and validated that this was a big deal. I didn't have to try to reconcile that in my mind anymore. I could accept that this was a big deal. It was very wrong what I did, and this is why I'm suffering. So to put all of those pieces together finally was such a breakthrough for me, because it was like that last hurdle that I had to get over before I could step into any type of healing.
Sheila, I have a question. How can churches get involved?
Well, let me tell you, I feel like churches can get involved by not only helping the abortion wounded, but recognizing that this is a spiritual battle. It's not a political one. At the same time, we can't opt out of the political process. We should be the loudest voice in Washington, but we have put all our eggs, I feel like, in that one basket, and we're fighting this fight in the wrong arena. We've got to pull it back into the church and realize that this is a spiritual issue, and that there are people sitting in our churches everywhere, men, women, families, loved ones that have been deeply impacted by this issue, but we're not talking about it in church because we believe it's a political issue. And it's not. And so when the church starts talking about it, my jacket, my husband and I see it every week. When the church starts talking about it, the people come forward and they're like, yes, I mean, not necessarily forward to an altar or anything like that. But when you offer abortion recovery, when you offer this topic from the pulpit, people are able to say, that was me, and I can come here and deal with this really tough subject. And one by one, I feel like as churches rise up and realize they can do something about this issue, this is the compassionate response to this issue, not the divisive and judgmental or condemning response. But let's offer hope and healing to those who are wounded by offering abortion recovery. Then we raise this army of truth tellers, like you've seen here today with Sonia and Beth. But we raise this army of truth tellers who are no longer willing to be silent, but will go on radio shows like this and TV shows and stand on stages and tell their story and tell the truth, because that's what sets people free and that's what people want to hear.
I couldn't possibly agree more. Beth, do you have anything you would add to that?
I just really feel like the church has done a really good job about talking about the babies as victims of abortion, but to have them begin to see that they're not the only victims, to start talking about this within the church, because like Sheila said, the men and the women in the church, there's many that have also walked this path and feel like they cannot let anyone know. And it's just educating them and letting them know that God's grace is deep enough to cover this sin. I think in the church, or pro-life people, they don't know really always what to do with us because they've looked at the babies for so long and now they see us in our stories and it kind of throws them. They're like, oh, you're the enemy. No, you're not the enemy. So our voice is so important to me. And I've heard Sheila say it, but to me, this is the way of combating or coming against the enemy in the abortion issue. This is how things will be changed. Even though we keep voting and all of that, this is how change is going to be done, through the voices of those who have suffered.
And Sonia, would you have anything to add to that?
I would say yes. Many years went by. Like I said, I was 27 before I heard the word abortion even mentioned in my church. And it was life transformational for me. And I don't want to keep that, like we've said before, like I don't want to keep that here in my basket. I want to be able to take it out and share it to others. And so that's what I need our churches. I want our churches to grasp a hold is that we can talk about tough issues. We do it with every other quote unquote sin that happens in the world, quiet the voices of those who have suffered through abortion. So I say, yes, it needs to be heard. It was sad for me to reflect back and think that by the age of 27, I had never heard anyone in my church talk about anyone suffering from an abortion. And so it's important.
See, and that's what Satan wants to do. He wants to isolate you, to think that you're the only one on the face of God's green earth that is going through this. Is there anything that the average person listening to this program can do to help?
Well, I'll jump in here. I think what an average person could do, I mean, there's people that are listening that are thinking, well, my life hasn't been affected by abortion, but I promise you, it has. We can't have 65 million abortions, just those that have been counted during the tenure of Roe, that we can't think that all of us aren't missing someone from our life that was supposed to be here. So we have all been affected by this issue. But I think realizing that is one thing, but then and watching your speech and your posts and your, you know, just the things that you say that are so condemning sometimes when I see posts and I'm like, oh, and my heart just hurts for those who I know are crawling back under their shell, not going to tell anybody because they know, you know, this is what they're going to be met with.
And give us some examples quickly.
Well, one time I was at a conference, and this is the first thing that comes to my mind, and a pastor walked up and said, hey, what do you guys do? And he didn't see the billboard and, you know, all these things behind us. And I handed him a brochure and he looked at me after he read the brochure and I gave him my little 30-second spiel. And he looked at the brochure and then just dropped it on the table and looked me from head to toe in disgust and said, we don't have women like that in our church, and walked away. So it's things like that. And then posts like the man walked up to me 2 weeks ago at a church that we had just spoken at. And he said, I know how to end this thing. And I said, well, tell me how, you know, like that. And he goes, give these girls a nickel and tell them to put it between their knees. So like, it's all your fault. Like just, and I mean, I had just told my story on the stage. And so it's like things like that, that he just thought he was being funny. But I mean, that is so condemning. If I had not been healed, I would have been a puddle. And so it's things like that, affirming life. Those are things. Instead of making fun of these families who have six kids, let's champion them and say, this is great. Or not looking down on someone who may choose to have a child that has a handicap. That child is worthy of life. And so let's champion them and say, we'll come alongside you and walk with you. Instead of looking down on them thinking, what kind of mother would bring a child like that into the world? So I've heard all of these comments that people think are just offhanded, but they're really so condemning. And I mean, those are just right off the top of my head. I could keep going.
Well, my wife can testify to this. I cannot pass by a large family without stopping and heaping praise on them.
Oh, that's There's good.
Something in my DNA that just will not allow me to do that.
I've seen you.
Beth, tell us your thoughts about what we as individuals can do to help.
Listen to our story. I mean, be open-minded enough to put aside your thoughts of abortion and listen to our story. And I agree with Sheila because I have had Christians say the cruelest things to me, more so than people of the world. I've had one Christian woman, after hearing my story, hearing the story of redemption that Jesus did for me, and felt the need to educate me on what my baby experienced during the process of that abortion. And I just had to tell her, I know very well what my baby went through when I took that life. I've been told to my face after they know my redemption that I'm a premeditated murderer. And yeah, I made that decision. But that's not the end of the story. Listen to our story. Listen to what we're saying.
Sonia?
Yeah, I would just echo that. Having a heart of compassion to listen, whether you're a believer or not, and where you land on the abortion is okay and abortion is not, it being compassionate, if that individual does have the feelings of shame and guilt and hurt because they made that decision, whether you fall on pro-choice or the pro-life side, just be compassionate. Be compassionate to that woman or that man that is hurting and lead them to a place where they can get healing. It seems so simple, yet we've made it so complicated. And Jesus is just real simple. And so I love that you can bring whatever to him and it's not going to take him by surprise.
Sheila, tell us a little bit about Save One.
Well, Save One is a nonprofit that I started back in 2000 that was born out of this whole situation that I was in. I started realizing that this was my heart and this is what I was, that God was drawing me toward, was to dedicate my life to help men, women, and families recover after abortion. And so I started this nonprofit in 2000. I thought it was just going to be for my church here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we were only helping women until men started asking to go through the women's Bible study. And then I realized God was trying to get my attention that this is not just a woman's issue. And so Jack and I collaborated and wrote the men's study. And then we started having grandparents and siblings of aborted children want to go through the class. And I wrote a third Bible study called The Ripple Effect. Now, all three of those Bible studies mirror each other. So it's easy to hold one abortion recovery class in your church or at your pregnancy center and invite anyone who is abortion wounded. Because we just believe that healing the whole family is so much better than just focusing on the mom. So we started this in 2000 and we were rocking and rolling through, you know, across Tennessee. And we started collaborating with other churches and helping people start the class. And then it just kind of started growing and growing. And we just started walking through the next door and the next door until now, 24 years later, we have 400 chapters in 28 nations around the world. And our books have been translated into 25 different languages, and it's just been phenomenal. But it just shows you the need. We're, you know, Jack and I are not some marketing geniuses that have made this so big, this organization, but rather the need is so great. You don't grow to that size manufacturing anything. We could not make this stuff up, these stories that we hear. So people see it and they want it. And we just are a strong believer that this is the greatest deterrent to abortion that we have, are the stories of the people, the truth coming out.
As your organization began to grow, I began to bump into you in different countries as we were speaking at the same event.
It was wonderful.
I just want to underscore the importance of helping men. I use your Save One program for counseling men, and it has been such an honor and privilege to walk with them through that healing process. As you're just a bystander, a vessel, if you will, watching the Holy Spirit does his work. It's just amazing. I'd like to ask all of you before we end this marathon, what would you say to a woman, woman to woman, who is contemplating abortion? Beth?
I would tell her first that she has some time to make that decision, to be educated on other options out there. I would be gentle. I'd be kind. I would pray with her. And if I felt appropriate, I would share my story, that just because the abortion is legal, it's not necessarily the best option. It isn't the best option. And that she's not alone. That's the main thing. You're not alone. There are others out there who have walked this journey. There's many organizations that will walk with you. You're not going to ruin your life. A child's not going to ruin your life. And I would be there with her and for her.
Sonia?
Yeah, I would do the same. Just be compassionate, be friendly, be understanding to their situation. Everybody's circumstances are their own unique circumstances. And so you want to be tender to that moment and share your story of what abortion has done to you personally, and pray that the Lord uses some of your story to help their heart change, and pointing them to resources that are available to them. There's way too many pregnancy centers around this world for us to constantly just go back to the only decision is to have an abortion. And so again, just be compassionate, be friendly, tell my story and offer them resources.
Sheila, I'd like to ask you to speak specifically to one woman as if you're sitting across the table from her.
I would listen to her. And then this was not the easy road that I thought it was going to be. This was not at all as it was represented to me. I felt as though I couldn't make any other choice because I was in this predicament. But really, I was only in that moment of my life. At 19, I wasn't thinking about the fact that I ended the entire bloodline that my daughter was going to bring behind her. You have to think about the whole big picture. How is this going to affect your life? Is this a story you will be proud to tell your grandchildren? Is this a story you can carry throughout your life? Do you want to this child's life to always be shrouded in shame, or do you want it to be championed? And so you have to think about the whole big picture and not just this moment in time, because it's hard to think past this moment right here. But then I would tell her that I wouldn't try to overcome every response, but I would listen with compassion and tell her that I love you regardless of what happens. You're not dead to me if you choose abortion. I will walk with you, but I just want you to know every option, because there are far more options than what you're being told, or if you're being coerced, that you don't have to do this. There are other things that we can do together.
Beth, I've always wanted to ask a person in your position where the abortion was so long ago and you carried that burden for so long. Do you now draw a line in the sand of before and after healing? How do you look at your life in total now?
I've never thought of it that way, but there is their before healing life, which was way different than it is now after healing life. But to know that that before healing life was never wasted by God, and that he has used it and he continues to use it. I think that's one of the most encouraging things as a believer that our sin isn't wasted, that God takes that and uses that very horrible, awful decision and uses it into something beautiful. So that's part of the story. And so there was a time, I don't like my story. No, I wish my story was different. I don't like it. But to see how God has used that and the compassion and just wanting other women to find that hope, the journey's been worth it.
Yes. And seeing how God takes the ashes of our lives and mm-hmm. makes such beauty grow out of those ashes. And we're seeing that yes. as living proof of the three of you. So thank you so much for joining us today. We deeply appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
You know, Brad, today's program and conversation has just been so heart-touching, I think is the best way for me to describe it. Hearing their stories, it really gives you a different perspective, and it puts into context the suffering that so many women and men are going through. I can't imagine, and really, it breaks my heart to even try to imagine the number of people who are currently suffering in silence.
You're right. And if you are a man or woman who has suffered the loss of a child to abortion, you do not have to continue to grieve in silence and secrecy, because you're not alone. There are others there willing to help you. If you reach out to us, we will make sure that you have a free peer-to-peer counselor wherever you are. We will walk with you through this journey, and you will find healing on the other side.
That's right. And I want to encourage everyone to make use of the resources that we will have available on our website, lifeissues.org, where you'll find information from our guests that we had on today. And that doesn't just apply to people who may want to start their own personal healing steps, but it also applies for anyone out there who wants to be able and ready to respond when they come across someone who is in need of those resources. Send them to lifeissues.org, where they will find them. I also want to encourage you, while you're at lifeissues.org, to join the Life Defenders today. You can become a daily part of our work to save babies and promote a culture of life across America. Giving monthly in any amount is a tremendous commitment to the pro-life movement, and it will be felt. We can't all be sidewalk counselors, but we can all support vital pro-life education. Monthly giving helps us reach persuadable people with a life-saving pro-life message, and it enables the very creation of this program. Help us do more for the babies by becoming a Life Defender today. Again, you can easily sign up on our website, lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for more Straight Talk on Life Issues.